You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Back in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, you know the drill. Drink some White Claw Hard Seltzer for the draft tonight. Before we talk draft, though, let's check in on the Tennessee basketball team. Bob, I told you yesterday I was nearing my end of caring about the transfer portal. I believe I said that I am under the understanding that we are coming out of this, and I named three players, and I said I think we're going to get them. Igor, Okparo, and Chaz Lanier. There's too much smoke around all three of those guys not to be the case. A domino fell yesterday with Chaz Lanier officially entering the transfer portal with a do not contact tag, which usually means that player knows where he's going. People have connected the dots there and think he is coming to Tennessee. And we had the updates coming out of campus yesterday that Okparo was there and had a great visit. People feel good about that. And we've kind of had some info and intel. We've talked about Igor feeling imminent to Tennessee as well. So it looks like those three guys should end up in Knoxville.
Yeah, it's what I heard yesterday was pretty much, again, we don't have announcements. We don't have commitment news, so to speak. But all the back channel talk is Igor's a go. Okpara's visit, as you mentioned, went really well. And that feels like that one was almost, again, Tennessee's to lose coming into the visit. And it sounds like both sides are in good shape. They're maybe even talking NIL details at this point. And and then Lanier hopping into the portal yesterday afternoon was big. And it's interesting on that one because there was some chatter out there that Maryland might have had a shot at him. At least they felt so. But the no contact tag that he put on, unless it's just a total, you know, blindside, seems to kind of lock it up that he's coming to Tennessee. So from where we were yesterday, we felt like there were some indicators. It's still not formalized, so we continue to wait. But boy, it feels like it's getting closer to being those three guys. Not a word on Cade Tyson, and it makes me wonder if these things are advancing with the other three like we're hearing. Then, you know, the Cade Tyson conversation, he just, to me, always just felt like a long shot anyway. I'll be shocked if he didn't end up at North Carolina. So so I think we're making some progress, slow but sure, and we still could wrap this week up with news that these guys are formally in the fold with the Vols.
So news that we have been waiting for starting to trickle in, huh?
I think so.
Okay.
Feels like it. Just feels like there, you used the term smoke. There's been so much smoke on this. I think it'll be a shocker if these don't materialize at this point, just based on what people are talking about. And it's not just randoms, you know, it's people who have connections to people and sources that know this stuff. So, yeah, I think it feels pretty positive. Haven't heard any more about those other two names that we talked briefly about yesterday, the Elijah Hawkins and Tucker Anderson stuff. I mean, those guys, if they were part of the plan, they'd probably be more role players and backups anyway. So we'll see if anything happens there. But
yeah, I feel like Hawkins, is it Minnesota?
Yes.
Minnesota transfer. I don't think he makes sense when you look at Lanier. I don't really buy that name. Kind of the same way we talked about the Ohio State with Roddy, is it Roddy Gale or Roddy Gay, whatever it is?
Yeah.
At Ohio State, who transferred to Michigan. I never really bought that. Didn't seem like a fit. I feel that way about Hawkins. Not saying they're a similar player, but just it doesn't add up when you start looking at the numbers and his standing and what he would probably want to do in terms of go somewhere and start versus come here and be a backup. I think if you do get Chaz Lanier, who is officially in the portal and seems all Vol and has for like really the last month, seems like that's a guy that you probably trust to run some backup point guard for you, so it kind of alleviates that need to bring in anybody else. So the prospect, the project kid, Hawkins, or no, what's the kid's name?
Tucker Anderson.
Tucker Anderson, yeah, the former Lady Vol son. We talked about him being more of a project, a freshman, come up here and kind of be a bench guy and kind of come up here and hopefully develop. That makes a lot more sense for that final spot as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it could be. I am excited. I've tried to keep my excitement tamped down on Lanier just because there wasn't any, you know, there was just so much scuttlebutt. He wasn't in the portal. You know, he was going through the process. But now that he's in the portal, checked him out a little more, and he's – I've a new term that I had heard recently, because there's a couple players out there, what they call coin flip three-point shooters, and he's closer to that. He's, I think, 44 or 45%. Just they keep talking about his offensive efficiency, doing it at a different level than what he'd be doing here at Tennessee. But we saw how it worked with Dalton Connect. So it doesn't mean the kid's going to be Dalton, but I'm just saying that, you know, he can make that jump and make that transition. It's kind of exciting to see.
Sam, do you have any Chaz Lanier takes? You told us you were ahead of the curve on Dalton Connect. I'm curious what you think about Lanier.
Yeah, I think Lanier's really good. I think Bob just, you know, he touched on it right there, but I think he's a great three-point shooter. Like he's at about 44, 45% and shoots, I think, 6 or 7 a game as well. So he's shooting at a high clip and, you know, shooting at a high volume as well. And so I think that's a guy who's obviously going to come in here and not be afraid to shoot the ball. And, you know, he knows what he brings to the table and everything like that. So I do think you're getting another dynamic scorer in him. And hopefully he can kind of, you know, fill that gap in a little bit that Connect really brought this year.
I found myself watching a 5.5-minute highlight video of his yesterday.
He's nice.
He is, but I turned it off like 2.5 minutes into it. It's so hard to judge against that level of competition. Like the shot, the release is quick. I mean, it looks good. The shot looks pure. The stuff with him getting to the rim and finishing, like that, I don't know if you can really if it'll translate. It didn't seem like he had like the jump out of the gym athleticism like Connect had. So, I mean, I imagine, Sam, if you actually did watch, you know, Dalton Connect highlights and saw his best plays cut up, you'd see like, oh, yeah, this guy's big and long and can finish at the rim. Mm-hmm. With Lanier, I saw him finishing at the rim, but against smaller schools.
More finesse score, it seems like, for sure.
Yeah. I don't get the – just from the 2.5 minutes I watched, I'm not going to act like I'm an expert, but didn't get the same, like, three-level score as Connect type of vibe. But the shooting seemed legit to me. It was a quick release. It was a good release.
Yeah, it looks like he can take it off the dribble pretty well, too, from three. That's kind of intriguing as well. It looks like it's not like he necessarily has to run off all sorts of screens to generate shots. He can create his own.
Well, I assume he's going to be in the Santi role, right? If you're looking at players and where they fit in on this team, I imagine he gets slotted in. And I will say, like, going in before watching his video and before watching the highlights, I think I said yesterday that he would be a guy off the bench. I don't know if that's the case anymore. I think he's your starting two guard. So, like, that means to me you just kind of slide him in the Santi role. And I don't know if he's that level of defender, but if you're kicking the ball out to someone, he does look like he will be able to get quick shots up or actually do something with the pump fake and drive, Bob, because you're talking about him getting to the rim and blowing people off the three-point line. A lot of that's because of how good of a shooter he is, too, in terms of people trying to close out on him. So he does look capable of driving past people for sure.
I was reading one of the posts from Jonathan. Is it Givany or
Givany?
Givany, and he speaks to Lanier having a 67% true shooting percentage. So, what do you know what true shooting is?
True shooting percentage is a formula, and it takes in like free throws. You get extra points for free throws. Oh, okay. It counts threes and it weighs threes higher than twos. It's basically shot per attempt. I think is essentially what it.
Yeah,
boils down to in its simplest form. Big men usually have really good true shooting percentages, and then what'd you say, 63%?
67%.
I mean, that's really, really good.
Yeah.
That's what people talk about as efficiency. That's what they're kind of referring to. We had some updates. Go ahead, Sam.
This little article on true shooting percentage is just saying that KD is like consistently above 60% in his career, and that's like top of the league.
Right. I was going to say Durant is notorious for it. It basically just comes to efficiency. So it's a formula. You calculate, you divide the total points scored by the sum of the field goals attempted, then you multiply it by 0.475 times the free throws attempted. So like it's a formula. Basically, it's supposed to, like I said, twos, threes, field goal, and free throws, and you have different values on it. Three pointers worth more than two, and the ability to draw fouls and score for the free throw line is important. So that's what you want in scores, is a guy who gets to the free throw line, hits his free throws, and a guy who shoots pretty good from threes. It's a formula that's tried to kind of weigh that out properly. So the big men that can shoot free throws are always up at the top. Durant's kind of a big man that could also shoot threes and get to the free throw line. So, yeah, he's always one of the leaders.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's, again, playing at a different level of competition, like we said, but he's clearly got some game. So, and I, after watching some of the video, I didn't want to anoint him as a starter until I started watching some of this yesterday, and now I'm kind of like, I get it. I get it now.
Well, it's what I kind of mentioned yesterday about competition. Like, I don't think he's a day one starter that comes in and is anointed. I think he is someone that's going to have to compete with, you know, Gainey. And I think he's someone that's going to have to compete with Meshack. And that's the thing about these three transfers I talked about. Like, or four transfers, you know, if you still count Dubar. All these guys are transferring here probably thinking they should be starting, and I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. One of these guys going to have to come off of the bench. Now, I think if you get Okparo as your starting center, that's pretty solidified. I don't know. I mean, he'll have to compete with Estrella, but I imagine he is your starting center, and that one's, you know, he's got, I don't want to say a stranglehold, but a good lead. But then, like, you look at the four, you know, I don't know. I don't know what Tennessee's going to do there with either Igor or JP or Meshack or Dubar. And then you kind of go to the three and you start adding it up. Okay, well, I think Meshack's the start. I think Meshack should be that guy. But, you know, then you start adding Lanier and Igor and Dubar there. And all of a sudden you got, you know, three spots and four guys, really five guys. For four spots. So, I mean, like, what are you going to do? Or for three spots? So that to me will be fascinating as we kind of fill out the roster.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, like, opening day or opening night. I'd be shocked to not see Jamai in the starting lineup then. But it does make you wonder what will happen as the season progresses.
I don't know. I liked last year having defined starters, pretty much.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it you had some guys get some early games starting because you had some injuries and some personal issues, like, you know, Vescovi and Zakai were a little late to the starting lineup. I believe, you know, Vescovi missed some time. I believe that's how it went, but maybe not. Maybe he was back by game one. Maybe I've forgotten.
No, I mean,
I don't think he missed a game.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he was just kind of out of it for
a little bit. Yeah. Maybe he didn't miss any time. Okay. But, of course, Zakai did. So you had, you know, Gainey get some run as a starter and then went back to the bench. But other than that, I was going to say, like, I liked having the starting five kind of defined. And Tennessee had really good injury luck last year, too. You didn't really have to shuffle your starting lineup once Sakai was back. You know, it was kind of solidified. I kind of liked that. So I don't know if I want, you know, to get to the season with one group of stars to start moving people around. I would like to have defined roles as you get to the season, and that's kind of what the offseason and the international trip was for, I think. So I prefer it that way for sure.
Sam, I don't know if you can check this out, but I'm just sitting there. We're talking about Lanier and the three-point efficiency, the overall shooting efficiency. What kind of numbers did Gainey have when he came in from South Carolina upstate? Because all I can remember is, and I'm thinking back to that Michigan State exhibition where obviously Dalton showed out, but Gainey was, I was like, man, we got a shooter, you know? I mean, he was dropping threes, and he looked really, really good. And he still had moments all season long, and he also contributed in some other ways on defense, et cetera. but he kind of fell off a cliff for moments at a time in terms of shooting. I just wonder, you know, he came in with, I think the book on him was, he was a shooter. I just wonder sometimes if we underestimate that transition to a higher level.
He was only about a 35% three-point shooter when he came in.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
And more so, Sam, I think you look at just the field goal percentage in general. True, like, yeah. I don't think his true shooting, Bob, would have been very high. He was 39% from the field, 34.5% from three, 77% from the free throw line. Lanier clears in all across the board, like comparatively speaking. Lanier is a 51% from the field guy. So like that alone is what, 12%? Is that 39% for Ganey his last year at SC Upstate?
35.
Is it 35%?
Mm-hmm.
No, from the field, not from three. Yeah. I think it was 39%, right?
Yeah.
So, 11% higher. The threes went from 34.5%, whereas Lanier is a 44% guy. Free throw percentage is 88%, so 10% higher there. So, no, at every level, at least compared to SC Upstate, Jordan Ganey, Lanier is higher.
Well, that's making me feel even better then.
Yeah, it kind of locks in what I have said this morning. I think that's your two-guard starter. Yesterday I said bench. That wasn't correct. I think he's definitely a two-guard starter if he ends up here at Tennessee. So we're still on Igor watch. We're still on Okparo watch. A couple of Tennessee players that hit the portal found a home. No, not the big man. Still waiting on them. But Freddie DeLeon did not end up at NC State like everyone thought. He ended up at Penn State, which is that going to be a place where he could go and start, you think, Sam?
Hope so.
I mean, I haven't seen much for Penn State basketball. Yeah, I mean, they've been the same program for the last 20 years, it feels like, where they're a fringe bubble team at best and a doormat at worst, and they just kind of hope to win 7-8 games in conference.
Yeah, I'm not going to act like I'm the biggest Penn State basketball expert, but I would hope that Freddie's transferring somewhere where he can't start. I feel like that's what he was wanting to do. So.
And DJ Jefferson ends up at Longwood, a team I think has made the tournament 3 years in a row, so a good mid-major program. Hopefully he can get some minutes there. I don't know if he'll be able to start, but hopefully he's just a guy who can go there and play and win some games. I got no ill will towards either one of those guys. I'm a little bit saltier towards Freddie than Jefferson, but that's just because we know how much Freddie was getting paid last year NIL-wise. That makes me feel a little sick. But Jefferson, I wish the best for him. And I still want DeLeon to succeed, too.
I'm just looking at, for grins, and they're different players as far as their position, but it's a guy Tennessee was looking at. Lanier outperforms Cade Tyson, too, in true shooting percentage, three-point shooting percentage. Again, Tyson's a little bigger, could play a little bit of the four, but I think he's kind of a wing guy. So I'm liking this the more I look at it.
Outperformed him head-to-head or?
No. Just take the percentages. It's just I would figure the level of competition is relatively similar. I mean, Belmont was in the Missouri Valley, so it's a little tougher conference than where Chaz was. But
I don't think he cleared him three-point-wise. I think because what, Lanier's 44%? Isn't Tyson closer to like 45, 46%?
41.7 is what I got.
That was 2 years ago. I'm pretty sure he's 46.5%.
Oh, I see it now. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head, but I feel like Lanier's probably shooting more than Tyson per game, though, as well.
You think so?
I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, judging the way they shoot threes either. I haven't watched Cade Tyson. I don't know how much screens he's coming off of versus creating. And a 1%, 2%, you know, margin is negligible. Cade Tyson, I think I still would rather have him than Lanier. Bob, are you saying the opposite? Are you saying you like Lanier more, just seeing the percentages of shooting?
I'm happy with Lanier is what I'm saying.
Okay.
I mean, I'm okay with not getting Tyson if that's going to be the situation. It'd be great to have Tyson, sure. But if we're not getting him, I think we're doing okay.
At this point, Sam, I don't know if it's even worth the debate, but we had the hypothetical, the choose one, Cade Tyson or Jermaine Mashak, knowing that you almost certainly have Lanier who can come give you some of that scoring. You have Dubar who can give you that scoring.
Jermaine Mashak, yeah.
Mashak seems more important now, right? Now that,
absolutely.
Now that it seems like you've answered the question in the portal offensively, like now I think Mashak seems even more important defensively. You don't necessarily have to rely on him to give you buckets because you should have some guys out there giving you buckets. Like Zakai could score, could set the table. And if you have Lanier and you have Dubar out there, like those guys should be the ones out there responsible for getting buckets and spacing the floor. Bob, you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
So let's just – we should break up publicly with Cade Tyson. We should have Rick Barnes back. No, we're good. We're moving on.
Kind of like what we had to do with – Tobey.
Yeah. And do it publicly, Rick. Tell him we're taking his offer back. We're good. We take care of our own. So we're letting the Tennessee kid that wants to be here come, and we're also going to get the son of the Lady Vol. Let's go bring him home. That's what we're doing. Take care of our own around here, buddy. You want to go to North Carolina? Go ahead. You're not using us for leverage to drive up the bidding war anymore. Uh-uh. No siree. Okay. Feeling good.
Yeah, let's hope there's continued movement. Maybe today we get some more news that these guys formally commit. But all indicators look good. That's exciting.
Obvious question of the two uncommitted guys we're waiting on. We look at Akparo as a much bigger need, right, and a much bigger necessity. That's obvious. But Igor, level of excitement, level of need, how do you feel about him? Because I'll be honest, I'm still somewhat indifferent about him. Like, I'm fine with the depth piece, but, like, I don't want him to be a starter. And if he comes here, great. But, like, if he doesn't, I think I'm okay with that. That's where I'm kind of at with Igor Milicic.
Yeah, I'd like to see him come. I'm intrigued by 6'10 and can shoot from outside in this day and age. That's pretty important. Always the unknown for me is, again, how much reliance Barnes has put in the past on your defensive capabilities, and I don't know, I can't speak to that with him. But maybe we're seeing a change. We're definitely seeing a change with how Barnes is approaching the volume of transfers that they're looking at bringing in. So maybe it's what we've talked about this week. Maybe there's an understanding that in this new age of the game, defense is great. It's always going to be important, but you got to keep getting offensive weapons, and I think Igor could be one of those.
Size and shooting. That's what G-Reg told us a month ago, and, you know, that's kind of been, at least with Dubar and Igor, and even being interested in Cade Tyson. Lanier's not necessarily small either. 6'4", as a two-guard in college. I mean, that's – is that how big Vescovy was?
Yeah.
Vescovy seems small sometimes, but never like at a detriment, right? Like he
was about what, 6'2", I thought, something like that.
Okay,
but I mean, you know,
I thought he was listed at 6'4", but maybe he was one of those that played more closer to 6'2".
Probably is 6'2" and is listed at 6'4".
Right, that's what I was gonna say. Like I swear he was listed at 6'4", but yeah, maybe played more at 6'2". I don't know.
6'3" is what ESPN has him listed as.
Okay, so split the difference. I don't know if Lanier is that same type of, you know, inflated height or whatever, but. Yeah, Igor, you know, 37.6% on 4.83, so he was having some volume there and could shoot. So, yeah, if given my choice of have him or not have him, I definitely want him. I just don't put – I view him as kind of a cherry on the top.
Yeah, but I'm with you. Given the transition we're going through with Adu and Awaka both out, Akpara is really a priority right now.
Yeah, for sure. We'll keep you updated as the Tennessee transfer portal turns. Got a couple tweets to get to. Do you get a little worried by Lanier's production the first couple of years? If it came down to Tyson and Lanier, I think you'd take Tyson. Well, first of all, yeah, I agree. If it comes down to Tyson and Lanier, I'd rather have the guy at 6'7" versus the guy at 6'4". And that's without even really seeing the film and, like, watching. But, like, similar shooting, I'll always take the size. Sam, agree or disagree there? If you had Lanier or Tyson.
Kind of disagree.
Okay.
I think for this, I think in terms of fit for this team, I like Lanier more than Tyson a little bit.
For what reason?
I think you just have that hole kind of at that two spot that I think Lanier fits really well. I think there's pieces on this team already that you can kind of tool together those three and four spots a little bit easier. And I kind of think guys like Mayshak and things like that, their minutes start to get a little bit hazier, I think, if a guy like Tyson comes into the fold.
Okay. Bob, are you of the same thinking if you could choose between Lanier or Tyson?
I would say this without seeing a whole lot of Cade Tyson highlights, but what I mentioned in the last segment about Lanier that I was struck by just watching his video, and I recognize, too, that they put these videos together. It's the best of, you know. I mean, it's not like what you can expect every single play, but his ability to create off the dribble I think is important. We don't have much of that right now, at least not what I'm seeing. Obviously, Zakai can do a little. Jamai can't really do that. We lost a lot of that with Dalton for sure, so we need more of that. My only concern is if Tyson is more of a, again, you know, coming off the wing, spot-up shooter type player. I just think we might need more at the top of the court in terms of being able to create, and it looks like Lanier's got that capability.
Yeah, I know statistics don't tell this entire story, but, like, it's Lanier's a 1.8 assist per game guy, and Tyson's 1.6, so, like, I don't think there's a huge difference in terms of just actual statistics. Now, I know that doesn't tell a story about off the dribble breaking people down, but I just go with size and shooting, man. That's what the theme of the offseason is for me, and Tyson's bigger. And I think if you put Mayshak at the two, which I think he could play if you had Dubar and Tyson stretching the floor and shooting, then I think that's just a really big team, man. I think Zakai at the point, of course, plays bigger than his size, but is undersized. But outside of that, like, you know, you'd have Dubar, who's 6'8", Tyson, who's 6'7", Mayshak, who's, what, 6'5", 6'6". Like, that's a really big trio of wings out there, and that would be appealing to me. So if I could choose one, I'd go Tyson. It sounds like my two cohorts here go with Lanier.
Yeah, I could imagine if Okpara can be as stout a defender as we're hearing and also generate a little more offense than he needed to at Ohio State, I could see them going with a bit of a smaller lineup in a way. I mean, and what I mean by that is I could even see it being Dubar, Okpara, Lanier, Jamai, and Zakai.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's the most likely lineup
for
sure. But, I mean, Dubar at 6'8", like, size-wise, I don't think is going to be overmatched, but or at least height-wise. But I don't know. You know, he's a wing. He's not a post.
Right.
I don't know how he could guard the post. So like that would be alarming to me. But you would hope that you could find enough defense at the point of attack with Zakai and Mayshak with some hopefully elite rim protection that could kind of cover some of that up. But I do think right now, you know, we kind of mentioned it yesterday, but you're making the shift to being more of an offensive team.
Yeah,
I don't think you're going to lose the defensive identity as long as Barnes is here and as long as Mayshak and Zakai are here. You're going to play defense. It just might not be top three defense in the country. It might go down to like top 12. And your offense is going to go from like 28th to 30th, maybe up to top 15.
Yeah, and we've analyzed, we haven't today, but in the past we've analyzed Dubar's, you know, let's not lose sight of the fact Dubar is a pretty effective shooter from three as well. So I still think we've got some of those. I'm with you. I love the notion of size and shooting. We still have some of that. And Lanier at 6'4", if he's truly 6'4", is not, you know, not small. So I don't know. I kind of like the notion of going to war with that type of lineup because it gives us a lot of offense and we still keep some of that defensive identity like we've been saying, which is going to be important. You know, you have it with Zakai and Jamai and then presumably Okpara. We're putting a lot on Okpara here, but that's what we got right now.
Yeah, I mean, like he's gonna have to be an elite rim protector, and Estrella, when he's, you know, when he has his minutes, he's gonna have to really be good at defense too.
Yeah,
I hope that whenever Rick Barnes decides to hang it up, and you know, we're winding down, I don't know if this will be his last year, if he's got a couple more years, whatever, I hope that he knows a year in advance and he can go to the powers that be that cut checks And I hope he can kind of let them know, like, hey, this is my last chance. This is my last hoorah. If we're going to do it, let's break the bank. Let's load up the roster as good as we can for one last run. So if this is his last year, I hope he's told somebody. And they're like, you know what? Usually we wouldn't overpay for a Cade Tyson, but you know what? Bleep it. Here you go, Cade. Here's your $800,000. We're going to give Barnes 9 guys that can all play at a high level and like hopefully go win a national championship. I hope he tells people whenever he's ready to hang it up. That way we could give him the best roster possible for the last shot at it. I will say that yesterday I did go ahead and lock in Tennessee at 35-1 to win the title. I just feel like that's a good number. I feel like if you're already kind of a top five roster returning, so like you had like the 15th best odds to win it all.
You made a college basketball futures bet like a month after the season
ended. I had some money in the account. I was like, you know what? I'll go ahead and spend this money now, and then I'm not going to miss this $200 whenever the season comes around. It'll be like found money.
I just hate futures bets. I can't stand having to.
We call that investments. No, I get it. You're a college student.
Yeah.
A college student doesn't need to be making future bets. You need to be worried about eating and, yeah, like getting a little action on the game, immediate gratification.
Sure.
Future bets are more just, you know, I got a little bit of money laying around. It's fun. It's fine. Got to put it like in some type of trust, some type of CD fund or something. Nah, just put it on the Vols. If Tennessee ever wins a national championship or something, I'll get my money back. I'll get it all back that I've lost. I just need a national championship in one sport.
I'll probably place my Titans over on win total actually tonight if we get Joe Alt.
There you go.
Yeah. So, what am I saying?
24-1 before the season, or basically the first weekend of the baseball season. It's down to like 10-1, 12-1. So you know. Had a $200 free bet, so $200 to win $4,800. So I see the national championship is something, and I'll be sitting pretty.
I'm watching these Cade Tyson highlights, and I'm thinking I'm like the Kentucky baseball play-by-play guy. Like, uh-oh, his stuff looks good.
Yeah, the comments you guys have made. I was going to say, I haven't watched full of him, but like I've read a lot of good things about him and seen enough to be like, I think you guys are underselling him. But also, like, I don't think we're getting him, so let's pump up the guy we are getting. So I kind of agree with you guys. No, we want Lanier. We don't even want Cade Tyson unless he comes and, like, is a stud. Like, he's going to be – if you're looking for the next Dalton Connect, and that's going to be the popular phrase, and I saw some guy even say, like, hey, Chaz Lanier, I think he has the potential to be the next Dalton Connect, which I don't know if that's wink, wink. We all know he's going to Tennessee, but he can also explode and, like, be this guy that everyone is talking about. But, like, Cade Tyson, if he does go to North Carolina, going to be, like, a really, you know – big-time player at a big-time program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. Yeah, R.J. Davis is staying there, too, so he wouldn't have to be the guy.
Get a job.
He is. You can't say that anymore. He's not Perry Ellis, the third or whatever. Was he a third at Kansas, Perry Ellis, the third?
Yeah.
Is
I think you're right. Yeah.
He's not Perry Ellis. It felt like he stayed in school for 10 years for free. Quotation marks, free. At least R.J. Davis is getting some NIL money. He is getting a job. You can't say that anymore because he's probably getting at least, you know, $500,000.
Yeah, I guess.
He'd tell you to get a job. Don't worry about me. I'm playing basketball and I'm getting paid. You go to school for free, bro.
Get a job.
Another tweeter writes like in. Davis. Yeah, I mean, I don't like him either, but.
Shot chucker. Generational.
Is that his reputation? Because he's just basically Caleb Love with a different name?
Yeah.
I know like the statistics of their tournament exit was very similar, but I didn't know that he had that reputation just being like Caleb Love, just straight shot chucker.
I felt he was a little smoother looking at it than Love. Love just sometimes looked nuts out there, you know, just like his hair was on fire. Davis always just looked like he was fluid all the time.
Now, what I will say for Sam's allegations is that it did take a year before we really realized that about Caleb Love, too. Like, everyone liked it at first. It's like, oh, never mind, just a chucker.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe
he had to return for you to know
that's
that.
What I'm saying. So, yeah. Like, maybe R.J. Davis next year, now that I'm aware, I'll just be like, oh, shot chucker. he ain't that guy. He ain't that guy. Another tweeter writes saying, Cool Runnings, a top 10 sports movie.
Ah.
That's one of those. I have seen Cool Runnings, so don't add it to the list of movies I haven't seen. But that's what I haven't seen as an adult. I haven't revisited. I loved it as a kid. Feel the rhythm. Feel the – what was it after that? Feel the rhythm. Feel the rhyme.
That's the movie about, like, the bobsledders.
Yeah, the Jamaican bobsled team, yeah.
What about that? And now the name escapes me, but we've both seen it. The Netflix movie that Sandler did where he was a scout.
Yeah, that was what? Hustle?
Hustle, that was it.
It was actually kind of solid, I thought.
No, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of those that, like, it's sports adjacent.
Yeah.
There's no big game. You got to have a big game. And, like, in this one, it's like a big, like, in the game, they're doing a, I guess they're having the big one-on-one showcase with him and Anthony Edwards, or whatever the guy's name is.
Yeah.
In the movie, Anthony Edwards' his name is in the movie. I don't think he's playing himself. He has a different
It's more
name.
Like the feel-good story at the end where, like, I don't want to ruin the movie.
Yeah, don't ruin the movie. But they have the big head-to-head at the end. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that is a big game. It's not a sanctioned game, but it's not that different than, like, White Man Can't Jump playing street ball. So, yeah, like, I liked Hustle a lot. I liked it a lot.
If you need a big game in something, Uncut Gems had a big game.
It did. Yeah,
Uncut Gems. There was a lot riding on that game.
I liked Uncut Gems. But, yeah, Hustle was good. The training montages had some Rocky feel to it. It was inspirational. I liked it.
Airbud? Airbud.
I mean, I did like Airbud.
Elite.
I've seen Airbud somewhat recently. It holds up, but also it makes me cry.
That's
it makes me cry. It's one of those. I don't know if it's grandfathered in. And like I cried at this as a kid, so I'm gonna cry every time I see it now. Like Armageddon's that same way. Armageddon made me cry as like a 10-year-old. So I cry every time I see Armageddon. At the end, every time I tear up. I know what's going to happen. I know that Bruce Willis is going to push Ben Affleck back into the little space elevator. I know that he's going to rip the patch off and say to give it to Billy Bob Thornton's character who has messed up legs and can't be in space. I know that Barry Pepper's going to be like, permission to shake the hand of the daughter of the best damn man I ever met, who he just hated like a couple hours ago. I know he's going to give the big speech to his Gracie at the end. It's going to make me cry, all of it. I'm just like, I know the little kid's finally going to get, his mom's finally going to get to let him be proud of his dad. I know it's just going to be like, you know, hey, mom, that's the salesman. And she's like, no, that's not a salesman, that's your dad. And like, you have that big moment. I'm about to cry just thinking about it. It just hits me all over. I got goosebumps, Bob. It makes me, it puts me in a wreck every time. Armageddon.
Okay. Before we hit a break, you mentioned Anthony Edwards. I saw a commercial last night. Have you seen the commercial with, I think it's Edwards. I couldn't quite place him because he was in street clothes and stuff, but it was Jokic and a little pony and Edwards walking through a hotel. I think it's for like hotels.com or something, and they're walking in and Edwards is like, hey man, you ever, you know that joke, two guys and a horse walk through a hotel, and Jokic is like, no, it's a pony. And It's just awkwardness, but it was pretty good. I mean, the fact that Jokic is now getting commercial stuff and he's kind of playing into his persona was kind of fun. But I saw it last night during one of the NBA games. Figured it was a matter of time before Edwards starts getting some commercial play.
I'll have to check. Nothing's coming up with Anthony Edwards hotels.
Maybe it's somebody else. It sure looked like Edwards, though, like cleaned up and, in, you know, again, in street clothes. And
I don't know, Bob.
Maybe it was someone else.
I don't know.
It's another pro player. It's
someone named Peyton Watson.
What's that?
A Nuggets teammate, I believe.
God, Peyton Watson. I didn't even realize he was on the Nuggets.
So the transition from the transition didn't work.
No.
Or it might even be Jimmy Butler.
No, it's not Butler. That I know for sure. I would have known that.
Okay, well, this one says Hotel.com ads with NBA stars Nicole Jokic and Jimmy Butler, so maybe it's a different
one. I was kind of hoping it was Edwards, I guess, because yeah. I want to see more of him. I think he's kind of a fascinating character.
He'll be up next when it comes to the commercials. He's a star in the making, or already a star.
Yeah.
Damn it, I feel like Jimmy Himes. The Athletic just got me for $8. That my $1 a month, you know,
yeah,
thing ended. And then I just got the email that they just charged my PayPal $8. I went to pay $8 for The Athletic. I feel like Jimmy Himes. I've been gotten.
You kind of do, though.
I know. I don't really want to cancel it.
Yeah, it's one of those that...
I want to be able to read it when I can, when I want to. But if you cancel, they just keep offering you. Come back. We'll only charge you $1, and then you just go back for $1.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, maybe if you cancel it, you'll get the deal again, yeah, or something like that.
Hour one of the books. We'll kick off hour two with some stories you missed from yesterday. About last night. Stick with us.
A brand built in Tennessee and born from the love of the game. Inward Half revolutionizes.
Oh, it's draft day. NFL first round. NFL is king. And the draft is a big event. 6 million people watched the draft last year. Titans, not on the clock yet, Sam, but it does feel like we are in a nice pivot position Bob, how are you feeling this morning
about the draft? I'm excited. I'm like I was saying at the top of the show. I think there's been a lot of buildup. Every year it seems like the buildup becomes larger and larger. But I think this one's got a chance to be super interesting. Anytime you've got as many quarterbacks in the conversation as there is in this draft, I think that's always that piques interest because that's the position in the game. I'm excited to watch. I'm really hoping for some little bit of chaos, you know, a little bit of trade activity. You know, there's some chatter. Yeah, it could go either way. Obviously, there could just be chalk, as what we've seen on some of the mock drafts and everything. But I'm of the mind that there's probably going to be some movement. So I'm looking forward to it.
What is the biggest storyline as we sit here on draft day? A mere 11 and a half, 11:45, 12 hours away from the first pick. What's the biggest storyline?
For me, I think there's two. We've spent some time talking about one of them, and that's this whole fascination with J.J. McCarthy. Is he legit? Is he or is he Blake Bortles? You know, there's that, or could he be a lot of chatter, like what we saw last year to a degree with Will Levis, you know, and then he falls. I don't think he'd fall as far as Will Levis, but he could fall down into the you know, the early double digit picks. I think that's a big story. And then hand in hand with that for me is I've heard a little bit from the Patriots and Gerard Mayo. What are they going to do with that third pick? There's still some belief that they're out there listening, and if they can get draft capital, you know, they need a quarterback, but they could maybe move down. And maybe they're not as wedded to a Drake May or a J.J. McCarthy as somebody else would be. And so those are the two most interesting storylines for me. I think McCarthy's probably the most interesting for a lot of people of where he's going to land. But I think the Patriots, it seems to me, I don't think the Bears, I don't think the Commanders are going to be doing much. I think we kind of know what they're going to do. But, those are the two for me.
Sam, any storylines that are standing out to you 12 hours away from the madness?
I think to me, my big storyline is just that there's not many top name defensive guys at the top of this draft. I think that you could see like the first 10 or 12 picks just be all offensive guys.
The latest a first round has ever gone with no defensive picks was the Patrick Surtain draft. So that would have been a couple years ago. Is that 19? 21? When was Surtain drafted?
I think 20.
Okay. Patrick Surtain being drafted at number 8 was the latest. It's gone ever. So Atlanta's right there at number 8.
21 draft.
Okay. Atlanta right there at number 8.
That's where a defensive player will come off the board, if so, probably.
Unless there's a trade. But, like, exactly. Atlanta, you know, could easily trade down. But, like, they've been pretty much mocked with Dallas. Is it
Dallas Turner?
Yeah, Dallas Turner.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
They want the edge rusher from Alabama. They want to add him. Like, that's been the talk pretty much every mock draft. So, like, if Atlanta doesn't do it at 8, if someone trades up, then, yeah, we would set a record for most offensive picks to start a draft. We're already looking at tying it. Because I don't think there's any real chance that a defensive player goes in the top 7.
Mm-mm.
I haven't seen any real defensive players get mocked in the top 7 in a long time from, you know, from reputable people.
I've seen some mocks where there's not a defensive player going until 12. I mean, that is a really interesting wrinkle, Sam.
Is that a statement just on the state of like, hey, offense matters so much and you got to have a quarterback, you got to be able to protect the quarterback, and you also got to be able to catch touchdowns? Or is it just like, hey, this is kind of an anomaly of a year and just no real elite prospect on defense?
Yeah, I feel it's kind of the second part of that. I do think it's maybe a deeper draft in terms of offensive linemen and wide receivers. And then obviously I think, you know, what we've been talking about in terms of the quarterback class in next year's draft being so weak, I think you'll see a lot of teams, if they do like a quarterback prospect this year, I think this is the year that, you know, you go up and you kind of make that move. So it is interesting that, you know, you've got a lot of depth and some positions of need that's every year in terms of offensive line and wide receivers and quarterbacks.
I'm interested in the trade markets, not moving up and down for prospects. I'm interested in the wide receiver market with T. Higgins and Brandon Ayuk. I think that's where I am maybe most intrigued by right now. You know, whenever we get to the actual clock ticking and the picks coming in, the Titans, of course, will have my focus. But I'm interested in what – and maybe like New England is tied into that, what they do at three. There's a chance New England strikes gold here. And New England has a chance to maybe set themselves up. Like, it might not be the worst investment right now, Sam. I know you don't like future bets. It might not be the worst investment right now just to look to see what New England's division odds are, because they had an elite defense last year, and there's a chance they come out of this with a good rookie quarterback and then, like, a good veteran receiver. Because if I'm the Patriots and I got picks at the top of the second round, like, hey, I'm not giving you a first-round pick, but, like, hey, if you're interested in, like, a really good second-round pick for either Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins, like, you know, maybe I'm kicking the tires there if I'm New England. And I can come out of this with both a good young rookie quarterback, which will be an upgrade. Like, no matter who they get at number three, whether it be Caleb Williams, not going to be, whether it be Jaden Daniels, probably not going to be, or Drake May, it's probably likely that that rookie is going to be at least as good as what Mac Jones was last year. And that means that guy's borderline bust. But there's a chance that that quarterback is going to be actually good and better. And then if you can come out of this with a playmaker too, and you have a new defense, or you know, a defense that was really good last year, even after it got hurt and you lost your two best players, I don't know. I just think New England has a really good chance to kind of set Gerard Mayo up for success. And I hate New England, or at least I have for, you know, most of my life, but I am rooting for success for Gerard Mayo. Mostly because I've been telling everybody for the last couple of years he was going to be a good head coach, and I was beating the drum that we should have hired him instead of Heupel, which, you know, I'll yield off of now. I don't think a defensive coach is what you need in college, really, unless he's just a stud like Kirby Smart. I'm fine with what we did with Josh Heupel, but that was the name I, you know, really wanted. And now he's got a chance to, you know, be a head coach. So I'm rooting for his success. I think New England is the most interesting team.
That feels like the pivot of the whole draft, too. You know, if they trade out of that spot, I think you'll get a lot of chaos.
Yeah, I won't call it the pivot point, but it's definitely like the potential, like, grenade point. And maybe those are the similar things. Maybe I'm just arguing semantics. But, like, New England has a chance to throw a grenade in the draft and, like, trade with Minnesota or trade with Vegas and really change things up.
Have you seen these rumors about the Colts trading up to three to try to get Marv?
I haven't seen that. I've seen him move, but trying to move up into the top 10 and maybe hopefully get Neighbors is okay. What I'd seen.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him get Marvin. I mean, there's all obviously the, you know, the serendipity to that if it happened, but yeah, I had not seen that one. God, if they move, yeah. I don't wonder what they'd have to give up.
Yeah, you'd have to move a lot, I feel like, for that, but who knows.
That's probably because you have to get to number three to get Marvin Harrison Jr. because Arizona's like, hey, we're good staying at four.
Yep.
And if four's there, we'll be really happy taking Marvin Harrison Jr.
Speaking of him, that's a good segue into he's one of the ones I'm watching. Like, again, it's a storyline, but specifically on a player. I hate – this happened last year, right, with C.J. Stroud. We got closer to draft time, and there started to be some – conversation, and what I'm hearing about Marvin is, he's not enough of a dog, you know, he seems a little soft, and you know, all this other stuff, and I don't know, I just don't know if that's smoke sometimes that's going on or what. But
do you see the video of him and his dad, I guess, with Marty Smith? There was some interview, I guess, at Ohio State, and they were asking him, like, they're asking Marvin Harrison Sr., like, what he thinks his son should do more, and he's like, he needs to ask for the damn ball more.
There you go.
So, yeah, maybe his dad thinks he doesn't have enough dog in him, too.
Well, I'll take your dad saying it. I don't mean, you know. But, yeah.
Murderer.
I just think that, I don't know. That's the part that's always fascinating to me with the draft is, again, how much chess is being played. You know, like I was saying with Harbaugh earlier, him talking up McCarthy so much. Is that just him? You know, he's just trying to help his own cause. Like, hey, I got a pick here at five. If you're JJ's awesome, let's talk.
I want to see what happens with the wide receivers. I want to see where the prospects go, like Marvin Harrison Jr., like Malik Nabers. Roma Dunze, like, it seems like he has latched on to Caleb Williams. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to their bromance, their business relationship. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it seems like if I'm Roma Dunze, like, I'm not getting past number nine. I'm not getting past number nine. They've compared it to Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton. You know, those guys got drafted the same year, and, you know, that was always kind of a safety blanket. And, you know, those, you know, Andrew Luck had a guy his whole career he could grow with and that he could trust. Like, they've kind of compared that to Caleb Williams, number one, and then they can come back and get Rome at nine. They're working out together. They're tweeting about how they're on the same flight together as they head to Detroit. Like, they seem to really be vibing.
God, if I'm DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, I look at that and be like, hey, man.
What about me?
Yeah.
Keenan's on his way out.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I think DJ Moore would probably be a little
miffed
a little bit if you got.
That's interesting, like, though.
Pick wide receiver.
If the, you know, Bears rationalize it with Keenan, like, hey, man, we're just, this is your understudy. Yeah, just hang tight. You're okay for a year or two.
Yeah, or maybe it's like, hey, we got a really good wide receiver room now. And DJ Moore's like, hey, it really sucked being the only receiver last year. If I'm not getting double teamed, I could put up good numbers.
It's true.
He still had pretty solid numbers, honestly.
Right, year, yeah. But I'm saying, like, DJ Moore is like, yeah, DJ Moore's probably like, I'm actually like a top 10 receiver, and no one talks about me that way because I've never have a quarterback.
Yeah.
I had him on my fantasy team last year. He had that one Thursday night game. He scored like 55 fantasy points or something. I mean, it was unbelievable.
He absolutely dominated Washington that game. But, yeah, like, you guys are so selfish. You're bad teammates. You hear that? You got maybe a first-round wide receiver coming, and you guys are worried about, what about me? How many balls am I going to get now? That's so selfish. How about we just have an old veteran, a good young stud wide receiver, and now we get a rookie for them to train? Like,
you've got to be selfish as a wide receiver, you know?
I don't know. I mean, like,
wide receivers are selfish. Yeah,
I don't know, man.
I want a diva, man.
T. Yeah. Higgins, Jamar Chase, and Tyler Boyd kind of made it work. And I know Keenan Allen's a lot better than Tyler Boyd, but, like, they made it work for a couple years.
Who makes that thing go? The diva, Jamar Chase.
We don't know. Is Jamar Chase a diva?
I think so.
Okay, I don't really think of him like he hasn't hit.
I think they all got to have a little bit of it, maybe. Is what I'm
sure, saying. But I mean they're pretty boys if that's what you mean. Like they're not going to be the tough guys. I mean, like, there are very few tough wide receivers that you talk about. So yeah, maybe they get more on the diva side. But you know, they had a good 4-year run together.
Like
the wide receivers,
AJ Brown, diva, great wide receiver.
I was just
Devontae
say,
Smith, reserved guy, doesn't really talk all that much. It doesn't do it for me.
Who's the biggest diva wide
they're
receiver
pretty damn good.
Right now? Diggs.
Yeah.
Diggs, yeah.
And then AJ, maybe?
Yeah. We need more divas back, though, in the NFL.
We got plenty of divas. We got plenty of divas.
Who?
You just mentioned two big ones.
Tyreek's one.
Tyreek's kind of one, yeah.
Do you think Tyreek is a diva?
I think he's less of a diva than the two we've mentioned. But, yeah, he's, you know, yeah, he is the man, and he wants as many balls as he can catch, for sure.
I don't think of him that way. Like you said, every wide receiver has a little bit of that. I mean, like, if your point is like, hey, we don't have the Keyshawn Johnsons, the Terrell Owens anymore doing, you know, sit-ups in the driveway and Antonio Brown. Like, if you're saying we're out of the golden age of divas, yeah. I'm not going to argue that. Yeah. But I think Stephon Diggs is carrying that mantle pretty good.
Sure.
But if you look at the actual, like, elite receivers, so we have, like, that list of top eight. Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown, not a diva. Justin Jefferson, not yet. I think Justin Jefferson's next, though. Mm-hmm. I think Justin Jefferson's got some diva in him, and we're probably going to be like, you know what, it makes sense because he's tired of catching passes from a rookie quarterback. But maybe not. Maybe he'll just ride it out and be a good – you know, he didn't really complain enough last year for catching hospital balls from our boy Josh Dobbs. Like, Josh Dobbs actually got him sent to the hospital and, like, maybe got his ribs broken on a high pass, and he didn't say nothing.
Yeah, you are right.
I felt Devontae was starting to get into a little bit of diva range last year. I think it was just out of frustration, but –
See, I feel like if he had that, he would have already brought it up. Like, he kind of stayed quiet from as far as I know of Devonta.
He'd do some in-game tantrums.
I think he just really hated McDaniels.
Yeah. Yeah,
he got a lot better once Antonio Pierce came back. I mean, he was almost like the big team player of that team once Pierce came over.
Oh, sorry, I was thinking Devonta Smith. I'm sorry. You're talking Devonta Adams. Okay, sorry.
No, I would agree with you, Sam, on that. I think you're right. It might have been – there were a lot of frustrated guys in the McDaniels era.
Yeah, Adams is bowling up for sure. And I think he's been pretty nonchalant, but once he got to Vegas, he's kind of like, oh man, I messed up. I shouldn't have left Green Bay. Now I'm just kind of unhappy.
Yeah.
We are kind of in an age. Maybe you're right, Sam. Maybe there aren't enough divas. Maybe it's just Diggs. Because even like Brandon Ayuk, who's that requested a trade, isn't like pouting about it. He's just like, hey, I want to get paid.
Yeah.
And I would never call him a diva. He's tough. Like Brandon Ayuk's about as maybe as tough as receivers we've had since Anquan Boldin. I mean, just the way he plays, at least. I think of Ayuk not as soft at all.
I want a guy doing like a tantrum out on Twitter or something like that.
Need T. Higgins to really light it up tonight?
Yeah, yeah.
Get me out of here?
Yeah.
Go ghost. AJ and Diggs are kind of the only two we have, but they're both pretty big, though.
Yeah, they're big, for
sure. Couple years removed, would you have considered OBJ as one during his peak?
I'd say so. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah.
Carried the torch.
Yeah.
Roma Dunze doesn't give me those vibes. Mm-mm. I don't know enough about Malik Nabers' personality. Like, I could see Marvin Harrison Jr. getting labeled as a diva, but just because he's quiet and, like, standoffish from his teammates.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily connect, doesn't talk.
Yeah.
Didn't show up for the combine.
Didn't show up for the combine. Isn't at voluntarily workouts. He's unhappy in Arizona. Like, if he gets drafted by Arizona at 4, like, the rumors might start swirling already that, like, hey, he's unhappy.
That could be an all-time kind of diva pairing between him and Kyler. Cause yeah. Now, Kyler kind of towed the line last season, but remember the year before, man, he was acting out on the field and everything else.
Wait, he got to toe the line last year because they were just bad whenever he got back. Like, he got back from injury, and there was no pressure. There were no expectations. Like, how does he handle a season where, yeah, like, he's under the microscope? And and I'm not saying they have expectations and aspirations to, like, win a championship or even maybe win the division or make the playoffs. But, like, they're a team that people think can be back to being an 8 or 9-win team. And that Kyler, you know, kind of is, I don't want to say a make-or-break year, but, like, needs to show whether or not he's the guy that you can build around.
I feel like he's kind of slept on.
Kyler?
I'm kind of interested in where the Cardinals go.
Well, I'm interested in him, too. I don't think he slept on. Now, I definitely think he's no longer, like, under the microscope. I think it got a little too much 2 years ago when you're like, hey, this guy really loves Call of Duty. This guy really loves his video games, and they're putting clauses in his contract to make sure he has ample study time and all that. Like, I would say he was under the microscope 2 years ago. Last year, just completely off the radar just because the Cardinals were bad. But I did think he played well when he got back. The Cardinals were a good team to bet on kind of at the end of the year, kind of the same as the Bears. Like, they were
scrappy.
They were scrappy, yeah. Like, they were a good, reliable underdog team that didn't quit, that played hard. But as far as Kyler goes, when you say he slept on, you rank him where in quarterbacks? You don't have to give me an exact number, but just a ballpark. Bob, have your answer ready.
12 to 15, maybe?
Okay. Because, I mean, there was times he looked like he was maybe headed for the top five. There was times he maybe looked like he was headed for the top five, you know, over the last couple years. And now he's settled 12 to 15. I have no issue with that. Bob?
I'd struggle to have him in the top 15, okay, honestly.
So maybe Bob is sleeping on him. Or maybe you're overrating him. I don't know. With anything, you actually have to work on the list and get him out and be like, okay, this guy or this guy.
Yeah, I agree. This year's kind of a show me year. He's got to do it.
Would you rather have Kyler Murray or Drake May?
God.
Just if you have the choice. You could take contract into consideration, too, if you want.
I'd probably take Drake May. Size matters, I think. I really believe that. I've always felt like watching Kyler Murray's like watching a 10-year-old out there scrambling around. He's got skill. I'm not, you know, bemoaning that.
It's funny to look at, for sure.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for him to get killed. You know, that's what I keep worried about.
Jaden Daniels or Kyler Murray?
Oh. Jaden Daniels.
J.J. McCarthy?
You know, you've heard my skepticism on J.J. I'd take Kyler.
Okay. Michael Penix?
Probably Kyler, just because of Penix's injury risk.
And then, like, in terms of, like, established quarterbacks, like, where do we have to go on the list? Like, Deshaun Watson or Kyler?
I'd take Kyler.
I think I'd take Kyler.
Tua?
That's a good one.
I like Tua.
That's a good one.
I'm a little biased. I like Tua, so I'd probably take Tua.
I think if you threw Kyler Murray into the Dolphins system, he's just as good.
That's what I was about to say. Like, if you put Tua with the Cardinals, he dies. Mm-hmm. If you put Kyler with Mike McDaniel, probably looks like a different guy. Like, I'd say Kyler Murray looks pretty good throwing the ball to Tyreek and Waddle as well.
Yeah.
And you talk about, you can't really use the size thing either with Tua. I mean, he's a little bit bigger, but he's got the injury concerns too.
Right.
The mobility of Kyler with all that speed in Miami, that'd be nasty.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm taking Kyler there too.
It would make Miami's offense even better because he could, you know, then you have the threat of him running too.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Justin Fields / Russell Wilson or Kyler?
I'm still not out on Justin Fields. I think I'd go
over Kyler?
Him. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll take Kyler.
Trevor Lawrence?
I'll take Trevor.
I think Kyler Murray, honestly.
Anthony Richardson?
AR.
Yeah, do you have to ask?
Oh, yeah, I just didn't know if we were going crazy doing backflips over, like, what, 3 games, 4 games? I just didn't know. I mean, it seems like everyone's just got in their head that he's just a stud. I haven't seen enough to think that.
I do worry about him being an injury risk, though. He's got to get smarter out there.
I kind of want Marvin Harrison Jr. to end up there in Arizona to give, you know, them an actual number one receiver and to see how that goes. Because I go back and forth on how I feel about Murray.
Is Connor still there? RB1?
I believe so, yeah.
Surely not next year. Surely they find somebody else here in the draft. Or, yeah, I would imagine they come out with a running back in the draft. A little bit more explosiveness. Let's talk about the quarterbacks coming up after the break as we continue to talk about the NFL draft. Tonight, make plans to hang out with us, the Fan Run crew. The Fan Run War Room, 8 o'clock. On your Fan Run Radio app and exclusively on video on the Fan Run Sports YouTube channel. Excited to see Marcus leading the show. He's really stressing out about it. He's really trying to make this his baby. So I'm excited to see what he comes up with. The Fan Run War Room. 8 o'clock exclusively on YouTube and the Fan Run Radio app. We'll talk quarterbacks coming up next. Let's continue our NFL draft coverage. Friend of the program, Jordan DeZanny, CBS Sports. Jordan, top of the morning. Thanks for waking up with us.
My friends, what's going on? Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
What is the biggest storyline as we are here, NFL draft day, round one? What's the biggest storyline?
That's a good question. I've got two, and I think they go hand in hand. It's the trade market atop the NFL draft board, and also J.J. McCarthy, where exactly his stock is, what teams are high on him, where exactly he could be selected. So for the longest time, people have been mocking the Los Angeles Chargers at number 5 as the team to move down the draft board while someone like the Vikings moves up. But now the Arizona Cardinals at 4 seem like another tangible situation for that team to move down, and maybe the Los Angeles Chargers stick and pick. So I would compare it to these. There are these two blonde twins, and you want to ask one of them out to prom, and one may be easier to negotiate with. Her name is Monty Austinport. So the problem is she wants to wait until the last minute to give you her answer for prom, but the other twin is expecting a grand gesture as well. So which one of these teams, if either, are going to land a trade deal, and which team is going to move up? Is it the Minnesota Vikings? Is it the Las Vegas Raiders? Could it even potentially be the Denver Broncos? And then on top of that, I'm kind of interested to see where all these teams have J.J. McCarthy ranked, because are we absolutely sold that he's going to be a top 5 pick? So the draft really starts in that top 5, of course, and I'm really excited to see how it all goes down.
Well, when you gave me that layout with the twins, it made me just go back to high school with going to prom by myself, just with the boys, just going stag and not dealing with anybody. So that makes me ask, Jordan, how confident are you on a scale of 1 to 100 that we do have a trade in the top 5?
You know, I everyone seems to believe that a trade's going to happen in the top 5. That kind of makes me want to be a renegade and say we're not going to have one. But ultimately, I do think that because you're drafting a premier position and J.J. McCarthy's hype, his stock, if you will, has indeed soared. I don't know what the reasoning is behind that, because we can talk about him as a prospect later, but I do think that there's a decent chance we do see a trade somewhere in that top five. Because, again, I really do think that the Los Angeles Chargers and the Arizona Cardinals would like to move down to acquire extra draft capital, especially in the situation of the Chargers. I mean, there's a reason that people are mocking J.C. Latham to him, and that's because he's someone who would fit the Chargers team as it is right now under Jim Harbaugh. The problem is taking J.C. Latham at number five overall seems a little bit rich. So we'll see what happens.
Jordan, good morning, and thanks for joining us. You mentioned it at the beginning. We've been talking about J.J. McCarthy, and one of the things I was saying that interests me in this draft, draft night interests me all the time every year, but this one is of keen interest to me because the biggest position in the game, quarterback, and there's so many names in the mix there, and you even mentioned it in one of your articles on CBSSports.com. What do you think the odds are that there could be as many as six taken in this first round, six quarterbacks? Bo Nix is the one I feel it might be a little bit of an outlier, but do you think he could still sneak into the first round?
Absolutely. This draft could absolutely match history tonight from 1983 when we had a record-breaking six quarterbacks drafted in the first round. We absolutely could see that, and you know, you kind of brought it up. The biggest thing is that quarterbacks are a premier position, so they're going to be overdrafted naturally. I don't care what round you're talking, whether it's first, second, third, fourth, fifth. But on top of that, if you draft your signal caller of the future in the first round, you also get that valuable fifth-year option tacked onto their rookie contract, so that gives you more time to negotiate if you indeed hit on your quarterback of the future. So it's really tough. I mean, I think we see five on the dot, with Michael Penix Jr. being the last one. I've been sold that he's going first round. I already betted at plus 150 a couple weeks ago, and it seems like he's someone who's really caught steam over the past couple of weeks, maybe even past couple of days, to be a first-round pick. The Las Vegas Raiders, I know, have been reported to really like him at 13. He could even go higher than that. Who knows? So I think if I had to put money down again, I'm going to say that exactly five go on the dot. Bo Nix suffers some kind of Will Levis slide where he goes early day two.
What do you attribute the top of the draft being so offense heavy? You know, we might set a record tonight for longest going without a defensive player taken. If the Falcons stay at eight and take a defensive player, it will tie the record from 2021 with J.C. Horn. What do you attribute that to? Just a lot of elite talent at the top for offense, quarterbacks being so important, wide receivers being so important now, a lack of studs on the defensive side. Which one is it?
I think you named all the reasons. It's not just one thing. I mean, first of all, we have three quarterback needy teams kicking off the draft, so quarterbacks are going to go there at seven in the top three. Then we have a couple of wideouts who seem like otherworldly talents with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. That's going to be five picks somewhere right there. This is considered a really good offensive line class as well. There's some studs such as Joe Walt, who's going to be a top 10 lock. So there's a lot of studs on offense, but on top of that, you talk to some people that they don't have many, you know, first round talents graded on the defensive side of the ball. So I think there is somewhat of a quote-unquote lack of studs on defense, even though there's plenty of defensive players that I'm in love with in this class. But with how the draft order shook out, with the quarterback needy teams, with, you know, again, with the stud wideouts, I think it's a really big thing as well. We don't know where Brock Bowers is going to be thrown in the top 10 either. I think there's a combination of reasons for why we are going to see an NFL record matched or broken tonight when it comes to the first defensive player taken.
Jordan, the depth of these offensive positions, I feel like, has been a big highlight of a lot of teams around the league leading up to this draft process. Do you feel like it's more likely that you see teams kind of move up, maybe back into the first round to try and go get a guy that they really like? Or do you think that a lot of these teams are maybe valuing some of the depth and maybe move back out of some of their round ones and into, you know, later into day two picks to try and secure some of these later round guys?
It's definitely the latter. Teams are going to be willing to trade down, especially if you reside in the back half of the first round, because I really do think that this is a deep class. Like, I have my team that's better than, you know, where I have guys who are going on day two who I think should be potential day one picks. I have guys going on day three who I think should be potential day two picks as well. So I think this class is just deep in general. I mean, we know people talk about the wide receiver position. That looks incredibly deep, in my opinion. Same with the offensive line, offensive tackle, if you will. I think teams are going to be willing to trade back and acquire extra draft ammunition to utilize in this deep class.
What would you do if you're the Tennessee Titans at 7?
Well, yeah, it matters on who's on the board, right? So if Joe Lalt's on the board at 7, that's who I'm leaning towards taking. And I'll tell you, John, I kind of went from going like, yeah, I'd really like Joe Lalt in Tennessee to saying, man, I really hope that Joe Lalt's available at 7. I'd really like that guy at left tackle. I mean, I don't have to tell you how much of a need that is. I don't have to tell you how important it is to shore up the left side of your offensive line for the next decade to come. But, I mean, there's a reality where Joe Walt's not on the board, and he's taken by the Los Angeles Chargers. And then that's where I think Tennessee might go, Malik Nabers. Even though they addressed the wide receiver position in the offseason, you really can't have enough wideouts, especially young wideouts, because we know DeAndre Hopkins could be playing his last season in Nashville, and then Calvin Ridley is 29, turning 30 years old. But it's interesting. What if both of those players are gone? That's where I think my number one option would be trading down and acquiring, hopefully, a third-round pick in such a trade. Maybe you can get your left tackle, Olu-Fashanu. Maybe J.C. Latham actually experiences some kind of fall. So the Tennessee Titans are going to have some options, but number one, in my opinion, would hopefully to get Joe Walt at 7.
Yeah, J.C. Latham, the big steam guy today. Traeger, Charles Robinson, they both have him going at 5 to the Chargers, which means that they've got some information somewhere that the Chargers are in love with J.C. Latham, because there's no way we went from, you know, a week ago that not being the case to now everyone kind of thinking that. So it'd be interesting. So if Nabers and Alt are both there for the Titans, you lean offensive linemen, because it seems like Callahan is kind of planting the seeds that the wide receiver is more valuable, because he said even, I believe yesterday or 2 days ago, said, you know, we view the tackle class as much deeper than the wide receiver class. Things like, hey, the top of the wide receivers are elite. And then there's a bit of a drop-off where he said, hey, I think we can get a good tackle, you know, into the second round even.
Yeah, that's very possible. I mean, there's tackles day two who could definitely be starters day one, if you will. But Callahan knows more than I do, for sure, but I would argue that the wide receiver class almost seems deeper than the offensive tackle class. But to his point, there definitely are offensive tackles who are going to go day two, day three, that are going to be legitimate starters in the league. So it really comes down to the Tennessee Titans board. They're going to have it lined up vertically and horizontally as well.
No, I'm asking you. I'm asking Jordan DeZanny, Joe Walt, or Malik Nabers. They're both there. Do you want the wide receiver, or do you want the tackle? Do you want to score points flashy-wise, or are you wanting to, like, sustain your offensive line and hopefully keep your quarterback alive?
I'm taking Joe Alt because he's the best chance we have of properly evaluating my young quarterback, Will Levis, in year two.
Jordan, here's a quick question for you. We've been talking about the Titans here. I'll keep it in the AFC South, but I'm from the state of Indiana. I'm a Colts guy. Would love to get your take, because I'm seeing, you know, and this is the way it is, I know, with mock drafts, that, you know, you can get a different point of view on every single one of them. But I'm seeing names for the Colts, like, runs the gamut, you know, Byron Murphy to trading up to get Malik Nabers to, you know, Ursay saying, God, we'd consider a trade up to get Marvin Harrison Jr. And then lately I've even seen one where there's the possibility of Brock Bowers slipping down to that 15th pick. What are you hearing? What do you think what would be your take on the Colts situation at this point? Do you think they're out of the conversation in terms of trading up, or do you think they would be open to doing something like that?
No, I think they're absolutely in the market for trading up. But if we're talking about a player for like Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't think that's exactly really going to happen. But when it comes to the Colts and who they could take in the first round, of course, it comes down to their board. But a position I'm specifically looking out for is in the secondary at cornerback, whether that be Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, whether that be Quinion Mitchell, who I would argue is my cornerback one in this class. He was so dominant at the Senior Bowl. Getting that new cornerback one for Indy would be a smart idea, in my opinion. But you bring up a player who I think has his best match, his best potential landing spot would be with the Indianapolis Colts, and that's actually Brock Bowers, the tight end out of Georgia. And there's a couple of different reasons why. For one, Shane Steichen, their new head coach, is someone who I really trust when it comes to offensive game planning and getting the most out of his weapons. That includes tight ends. These young tight ends who are versatile on the pass catch could really be the best friends of a young quarterback. So he's someone who could elevate Anthony Richardson's game and hopefully keep him healthy as well. Brock Bowers, when he talks to people, Everyone says he's a top 10 talent. He's a top 10 talent. But I'm starting to doubt if he's really a player that's going to get selected in the top 10 just because of other teams' needs. You go back and look at how these first-round tight ends have fared over the past couple seasons. I look at Kyle Pitts. If you draft one of these young, talented pass catchers, you really have to game plan around them and have to game plan around getting them touches. And with young tight ends, not a lot of teams really want to do that offensively, it seems like. So with the Indianapolis Colts, I think they'd be a great fit for Brock Bowers.
Out of these top three quarterbacks, Jordan, who are you least confident in terms of having a successful NFL career and you know, and maybe just potential of place that they drop to? You know, it seems like you're going to have Chicago and Washington obviously taking that one, but you know, it's a seems like a little bit of a coin toss where Drake May goes. But out of those two top three quarterbacks, I guess, who are you least confident in having a successful NFL career?
So I will tell you, I'm pretty sold that it's going to be Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May at three specifically. That's going to be the top three picks in the draft. Now, as for if the New England Patriots trade out of that three spot, that remains to be seen. But you asked a really good question, because I think most people have Caleb Williams as QB1, and you know, he's considered the QB1 of this entire class. And I'm someone who's tried to stand on the table for Drake May. I really like this prospect out of North Carolina. He wasn't able to build on his 2022 campaign. You know, before last year, I was really thinking that he could potentially challenge Caleb Williams for that QB1 spot. But all of a sudden, here comes Jaden Daniels with a historic campaign at LSU. I can't really blame people for having him as the number two quarterback. I know some people actually have him as QB1 over Caleb Williams. But with Jaden Daniels, I think that he's going to be a lock to number two to Washington. So, you know, if you're asking me the quarterback I'm least confident in, I guess I would just have to say Drake May, because I've definitely become pretty intrigued with Jaden Daniels as a prospect. He's someone who can really be a dual-threat quarterback, but he's someone who's efficient through the air as well. More so than someone like Justin Fields. So I think Jaden Daniels is a really intriguing prospect. With Drake May, if I could make a case against him, there are definitely some inconsistencies with his game. Like, he will miss some open throws, but a lot of those I'll chalk up to the inconsistencies with North Carolina's offense in general. I really do like Drake May as a prospect, and he deserves to be a top three pick in my opinion.
Do you buy J.J. McCarthy as being close to that level of prospect?
You know, I'm glad we're talking about McCarthy, because I don't know what's exactly propelling his stock and propelling his hype to this level. I really do feel like it's Jim Harbaugh and his staff kind of behind the scenes so he can facilitate a potential landing spot at number five overall. But, you know, I really do almost appreciate the candor that some of these NFL draft analysts have talked about McCarthy, because they've been honest, saying, you know, we're all in alignment that McCarthy could have a better pro career than he did college career in terms from a production standpoint. But the fact that he's being talked about as a top five pick is pretty crazy to me, because if I was an NFL GM, John, I'm not taking McCarthy in the top five. In fact, I don't know. He might be a top 10 pick, maybe. I guess you could talk me into that. When I did my mock draft, I think I had a team trading up to number 10 with the Jets to select him. I think the Las Vegas Raiders. So McCarthy, I mean, he wasn't someone who shouldered the load on offense. And you kind of want that prolific production from your franchise quarterback, whether that be Michael Penix Jr. or even Bo Nix at better numbers. With J.J. McCarthy, he was efficient when called upon to make those throws on third down. He definitely has these athletic traits. And again, I'm in alignment that he could have a pretty good pro career. But he's a tough prospect to judge because, I mean, he only completed like 10 passes in the national championship game. And that was a common theme throughout the course of the 2023 season. So it's hard to evaluate what this guy's going to be, but I can tell you for sure, I'm just not an NFL general manager who could pull the trigger on picking him in the top five or trading up into the top five to select him.
Is Brandon Ayuk worth a first round pick?
It's funny you ask that, because an NFL general manager told the San Francisco Chronicle that he's not worth a first round pick. But when our guy Jonathan Jones reached out around to different executives around the league, they kept pointing back to the A.J. Brown trade a couple of years ago for what Brandon Ayuk could be worth. And that was a first-round pick plus a third-round pick, I think it was. So in my opinion, I think he is, but I think you have to have the financial resources ready to pay him with this exploding wide receiver market that's just going to get crazier and crazier after the draft. But the situation seems to really be up in the air. But I did write a column for CBS Sports trying to buy or sell some of these biggest rumors. And for Brandon Ayuk being traded on Thursday night, I'm kind of selling that idea. But according to reports, it really does sound like the whole situation's up in the air.
Yeah, it's not crazy. Like, it feels like Brandon Ayuk is in a better spot right now than A.J. Brown was before getting traded to Philadelphia, right? In terms of standing in the league, I mean, he's a couple years older, but he's also, his numbers and his production have been better than what A.J. Brown did in Tennessee, right?
You're exactly okay. Right. I mean, he did something only Jerry Rice has done in a single season this past year, and he's regarded as one of the best route runners in the NFL. He's still a younger guy, so he's someone who is poised to break that wide receiver benchmark.
Jordan DeJani, CBS Sports, appreciate your time. As always, check out his work, CBSSports.com. Last question, open-ended. Maybe you don't have one at all, but just going to give you the floor. Do you have a best bet for tonight's NFL draft or even second or third round?
Yeah, it's interesting because I did my top five bets a little over a week ago, and one of those was Penix Jr., being a top 32 pick at plus 150, but those odds have already shifted dramatically. I told my boss last night, hey, I can come up with another top five bets to publish this morning, but it was really tough looking at how these lines have shifted, and they're so juicy right now. So I kind of got a little crazy with it. Like, if you wanted to bet Malik Nabers to be the pick at number 7 overall, regardless of team, that was plus 700. I think that's worth putting some money down. The same for Roma Dunze at number 9 overall, whether that's the Bears or not the Bears. I don't think he gets out of the top 10. So pick-specific props are something that I'm looking at right now because ultimately they'll give you the best bang for your buck.
Jalen Wright, 16-1 to be the first running back taken. I mean, it feels like it's not that.
That's a good flyer as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, even Nabers getting a draft ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. is like 9-1 this morning. That doesn't feel like a crazy long odd. Jordan, appreciate the time. Jordan Ajani on X. You want to give him a follow. Talk to you soon, brother.
Anytime, guys. Thanks so much.
Appreciate your time. Sam says to break. We'll keep talking the draft afterwards.